We're live here at Mary's Diner in Waterbury as part of Darting Across Connecticut. And probably my favorite part of this whole thing we're doing is just learning about the backstories of the places that we go. And then I invariably, I'll talk about where we are, and then listeners will reach out to me and tell me things. And I'm all prepared to talk about the Brass City or Timex or a whole bunch of different things as it relates to the settlement of Waterbury. People came in, I think, from like Farmington to settle it initially and all this other stuff. They couldn't grow anything, and eventually they figured how to use the rivers to manufacture. But forget about that. You know, I welcome in Rachel Guest, who's the director of the Silas Bronson Library here in Waterbury. This morning, somebody reached out to me on social media, history-wise, one of our great listeners, and JFK was here 2 days before the 1960 election. And not only that, some people say 30,000, some people say 50, but like it was like an unbelievable day to the point that he was like, he was touched by it. Like he was like, and then I guess he was going to come back, but obviously he didn't get to run for re-election, but RFK came back and, and closed the loop. Just like, I had no idea.
Yep. And it just, it wasn't just that he was here and had a massive audience. It was 3 a.m.
So really?
Yeah. Yeah. So he spoke from the balcony of the Elton Hotel at 3 a.m. to a crowd of tens of thousands of people. That's how much enthusiasm there was.
That's crazy. And you know, it's funny because if you go to the JFK Library website, they have his daily schedule. You could look at any. I just love the era of that time in our history because they have every day scheduled out, and it's all on paper, and it's all transparent, and it's just incredible. But I didn't even know that. Because he did it in the middle of the night.
Right. So, you know, you would think a huge crowd, it must be normal hours, but it wasn't. It was the middle of the night. And, I mean, Waterbury's Irish history is so strong. And the Irish-American community here, it was such an important thing for them to have a representation. Mm-hmm. You know, the first Catholic president, that was a huge, huge thing. And an Irish Catholic, that was major back then.
Yeah, people don't realize, I mean, a lot of our listeners do because they're smart, but, you know, there was he was the first Catholic president of the United States of America. You know, we're talking with Rachel Guest, director of the Silas Bronson Library. And in terms of, you're not born and raised here, but you love the history of this place. So, you know, the general question is, what draws you so much into the history of this place?
So I grew up in the area when I was 11, and I, as an adult, I worked at the Matatuck Museum, which is our local history and art museum. I worked there for many years and really became immersed in the history. And Waterbury is a wonderful city. My experience, we did a whole bunch of oral history projects, and the community was so welcoming and so inviting. I've been in other communities where I've worked, where I've lived, where the communities weren't as welcoming, where they were a little more like, what is this, you know, who are these strangers in our town? But Waterbury is always just welcomes everyone with open arms, and it's a wonderful place to live.
Let's talk about the history. You know, everyone says the Brass City, there's the Brass, you know, Mill Mall or what have you. Just explain to people who don't know, as quickly as you can, the backstory of brass and the city.
So everything used to be made with brass. You know, you think of everything that we have now that has plastic, it used to be brass. Brass used to be the major product in the world.
It was known as a higher quality than your other metals,
so it's,
too,
so it's more durable. It's easier to work. You know, it's we're not going to go into the whole details of what brass is. That's a whole other story. But Waterbury started making, they started with buttons in the very early 1800s. Waterbury, as its name implies, has a lot of waterways. And back in the day, you needed those brooks, those streams, those rivers
to generate the
energy to power your factory. And so what we went with was brass. We were able to initially reuse old kettles and then began manufacturing the actual brass itself once the industries got big. Everything you see now for Waterbury was shaped by the brass industry. It was.
What year are we talking
about? So we're talking really taking off, you know, it starts in 1812, really starts picking up in the 1830s, 1850s. By the 1890s, this is the brass capital of the world. We had, our companies were selling products everywhere. You could find something, a product made in Waterbury anywhere in the world.
And also, you know, the one thing I know from my father-in-law, it also generated a ton of residential wealth, right? I mean, there are neighborhoods from that era that are, some may be still sort of discernible today that like there were like massive homes and mm-hmm. really wealthy people.
Yep. So the brass company owners initially lived here in Waterbury. As the city grew and became more congested and more polluted, the people with the money moved out to the
Litchfield
suburbs. Moved out into the suburbs. But we still have those huge mansions that are still here on the Hillside neighborhood and up in the Overlook neighborhood. That was really the early 20th century when you had a very prosperous middle class because the economy in Waterbury was so strong.
You know, my father-in-law is 88, and he was born and raised here in Waterbury, and I talked to him last night on the phone, and he pointed to, I don't know if he grew up in Bunker Hill, but the two neighborhoods he mentioned were, in the heyday, were Overlook and Bunker Hill, mm-hmm. from like the pre-World War II to post-World War mm-hmm. II. Talk about how important Waterbury was to the war machine in World War II.
It was massive. It was so massive. Waterbury's industries for World War II and also for World War I switched all of their manufacturing to wartime manufacturing. So the munitions, we have photographs of just mountains of spent cases, shells, from all of the bombardments. All of that was made here. It was a 24/7 operation. The factories were going nonstop during the war. They were importing laborers coming in from Jamaica. They were bringing so many people here because they had to keep that war effort going. There were bond rallies on the green where people were raising money to help support the war effort. There were victory gardens. Everything that you ever hear about, you know, if you ever watch Ken Burns' documentary on World War II, part of that takes place here in Waterbury because this was a major wartime manufacturing center.
You know, we got to go. I love it, and I love the fact that you're passionate about it, and obviously I'm sure the Silas Bronson Library is the beneficiary of that. Rachel Guest, I really wish we could talk a little more about the post-World War II because, I mean, the assumption is that in New England you have this incredible manufacturing lull, but somehow Waterbury is maybe not what it was in 1945, but manufacturing is still part mm-hmm. of the soul of the city, and maybe we'll get a chance to do that another time.
Great.
Thank you so much, Rachel Guest, again, from the Silas Bronson Library.